Good morning. I'd like to welcome you all to the September 28th Stafford County Board of Supervisors meeting and invite you to stand and join us for the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We'll start this morning with a presentation regarding the 2010 Information Technology Best Practices Award. Paul?
Good morning, Chairman Grover, board members, Mr. Robinson, Mr. Goring. I'm Paul Gibson, County Chief Information Officer. I'm here to talk to you this morning about an event that we held this summer, our Summer IT Forum, and in particular the IT Information Technology Best Practices event that we held, and the winner of one of our awards, which is our Sheriff's Department. This year we held our second annual Information Technology Summer Forum, where we invite all county IT staff to come to an event where we do IT ethics training, we do IT security. We also hold a best practices competition where we invite county departments to submit some achievement in information technology that they would like to see some recognition for, and we have our Information Technology Steering Committee evaluate the best practices that have been nominated and ultimately select winners for the event. The purpose of the best practices event is really to give recognition for staff for achievements they've done, but also to provide some exemplars of best practices in IT for other county departments to look at, to model, hopefully to emulate in terms of improving the quality of information technology in the county while simultaneously giving some recognition to staff who have done that. This year there were three winners in our best practices competition. Our Community Services Agency won an award, our Strategic Business Technology Department won an award, but the overall winner for the best practice for 2010 in Stanislaus County is the Sheriff's Office Online Crime Reporting Module. They also won. This year we held a special fan favorite event where the attendees also got to vote, as well as our IT Steering Committee, and they also selected the Sheriff's Online Crime Reporting Module. So we wanted to just take a few minutes this morning to recognize their achievement. Sheriff Christensen is here, and he'd like to talk a little bit about the system that was developed by his staff.
Thank you, Paul. Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Morning.
Members of the board, Mr. Robinson and Mr. Goring. I'm certainly very excited about this. This is one of those things where we don't often get enough opportunities to thank our employees and recognize them for the great work they do, and this goes along with our effective and efficient delivery of services. This new online reporting capability now will provide people an opportunity to access our services via the internet, via home, to be able to report crimes to us that don't necessarily necessitate the response of a deputy sheriff, but at the same time be able to provide us with information about crimes that occur in the community, and we'll be able to continue to mitigate those and track those through crime analysis. So this is just another example of the work being done by our staff. I'm very grateful. I've got a great team, and I want to thank and recognize this morning Mr. Scott Campbell and Mr. Bob Van Treese. Go ahead and stand up, gentlemen. Members of our IT team, and largely responsible for what you see here today. So, gentlemen, thank you very much. I know the board has some parting gifts, I believe, for both of you, and I appreciate your time this morning. Thank you.
Well, on behalf of the board, I'd like to thank you guys and your department for thinking creatively and innovatively and coming up with something new and different on how to serve our public. I would like at least one of you to explain the difference between winning a best practice award and winning a fan favorite award.
Well, I'll say that the fan favorite was voted on by our peers, so they thought our product was the best at the IT Summer Forum. The best practices was voted on by the department heads. So they thought that also was the best product at our forum.
What was the impetus to putting this together? What caused you to see this meeting?
Well, our management team decided that we needed something to serve the public better with our limited resources. This way, we projected out that we had 2,000 reports that the deputies had to go out on. This way, hopefully, we can reduce that amount by a few thousand hours and save the deputies from having to respond right to the scene. We can do it online.
Anything you'd like to add?
Pretty much covered it.
Well, I want to thank both of you, and I'll hand you each one of these, and when my hand frees up, I'll shake your hand. Let's take a phone there. There you go. Thank you very much. Good job. Thank you. Okay, opportunity this morning for a public comment, as we always have. A reminder that these comments are for subjects that aren't on the posted agenda, which will be the ones on the agenda that are listed there for today's discussion. We have a number of requests for discussion. I'm going to ask that you not be repetitive to the person that spoke previous to you, and that we voluntarily restrict your comments to 5 minutes or less. We'll start today with Mr. Emerson Drake, and following Emerson will be Jerry McKibben.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, audience, people at home, if you will. I'm coming here today with a slightly different concern from the citizens, I believe, of Modesto, and actually Stanislaus County, and it should be the entire Central Valley. And this is in regards to the biomass plant that they'd like to build on the south side in your area, in the Beardsley Industrial Park. Now, we all know that MID has turned down the opportunity to be the lead CEQA agency. But now a few things have come to light. I spent yesterday afternoon following a public information request, which I do make on occasion, and sat down and read their entire packet of information regarding what's going on over there. Well, we had hoped, many people of us, I was at the MID meeting 2 weeks ago when the board turned down the opportunity to continue with that project. But some things have come to light since then that have caused great consternation, to be quite honest. You always hear things babbled about in public. At that meeting, you heard countercharges between the people from the energy company and the groups there that were there trying to stop them or trying to point out the truth. So I made a couple copies, or I had them make copies, I should say, yesterday. And I just wanted to bring a couple things to your attention. So this isn't hearsay. I'll be happy to provide you with these, or I'm sure the Air Pollution Control District will be happy to, too. But when it comes to the biomass plant and agricultural refuse, you know, they're always making the big claim that the biomass is going to feed everything, that they're going to use all that. We'll use all. We've got plenty here locally. That was one of the arguments. But in July 9th, Dr. Stephen Ensley wrote a letter to Dave Warner, the San Joaquin Air Pollution Control District down in Fresno, and he pointed out that he only wants to use 6.4% of the fuel of biomass refuse compared to what everybody else, you know, you read in the paper, it'll clean up the orchards. Interestingly enough, as a sideline, Cecil Hensley, a board member for MID, pointed out that he likes to use the refuse. He likes to chip it up and put it on the floors of his orchard, that it works well for him. He won't sell it. In any case, when they talk about a minimum of 50%, and now we find out it's 6.4%, there's a concern there. There's also another long, detailed argument about what biomass really means. Well, one of the things it means is construction wood. Now, for every 100 pounds of wood, they're allowed to put 2 pounds of plastic in there. Well, that doesn't seem like an awful lot, except that when nobody wants to breathe the fumes of plastic, those are a lot more concerning than they are just plain wood. And somebody, I'm reminded of when my grandsons were much younger, they always asked the question, which is heavier, a pound of nails or a pound of feathers? Well, obviously they're the same, but quantity-wise, there's an awful lot of difference there. Personally, I don't want to breathe 2 pounds of plastic no matter what. Now you ask, why am I here? Good question. It's also come to light. You didn't ask that. Okay. What's come to light now is they've gotten so desperate now with this company, Dr. Stephen Ensley, now that MID's apparently walked away from, because they need a public agency to be the lead on CEQA, okay? They've asked the Air District to be the lead. We can't get an answer from the Air District yet, or I wasn't able to, so I'll be on the phone to to Dave Warner this afternoon to find out whether it's up or down. My concern here today is there's a possibility, if it hasn't happened already, that your group, either the board or some office of the county supervisors, will be asked to be the lead agency to get this plant up and running. And the reason they're so concerned about it is they have to have, another point of the documentation, 5% of the plant built by December 31st, and they lose 30% of funding when it comes to building this plant. Now, nobody's against jobs in this area. We need them badly. But in case you didn't notice, the air's not so nice the last few days. When I drove up to the district yesterday, right underneath the American flag, what was there? The big red flag. Air warning day. It's present again today. Do we really want someone burning not agricultural waste, 6.4% agricultural waste? Okay, I'll go there with you. But what are they using for the rest of the fuel? It's not a pretty sight. It's in the information. I'll be happy to provide it. Otherwise, contact the Air District, because you're going to want to hear from their own ear, their own mouth, what they're saying that they can burn out there. A biomass plant, when it comes to agricultural refuse, is not the truth. He says in his own line, in his own statement, there's not enough refuse for us to buy here in the Central Valley. It's all being shipped out to other plants. So what's he going to burn? Let's talk about trash. So I'm going to ask the council today, I'm sure you may not know it off the top of your head. Have you been requested to be the lead CEQA agency? And if need be, obviously by this afternoon, actually as I walk out the door, I'll pick up the phone, the letter will be in the mail today.
Mr. Rigg, can I ask you to call Jack after the meeting, Mr. Doring? This is a public comment opportunity,
right.
not a back and forth.
No, I understand. I wasn't expecting a response.
Okay,
it's just that
okay.
It's important, and we'll make it a public information request if you prefer it that way. That was my only
point. I probably just a simple phone call would get you what you needed to know.
That would be great, because I urge you, I implore you, do not act as a CEQA agency or lead on the CEQA. Do not. We all breathe air here in the Valley. I know you and your families do, too. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Jerry McKibben, followed by Sarah Cheeseman.
Okay. Thank you. Good morning, gentlemen. I haven't done this very often, but I'm here speaking on behalf of the IHSS, clients and providers. I know we don't have a big turnout today, but there are a lot of people that are impacted and really need the IHS program as it currently is going. I mean, I don't think anyone is getting rich working off the program, and we've all complied with the new requirements to become a provider. I just hope that you guys will be sympathetic to our cause. Really, everything really prepared. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Sarah Cheeseman, followed by Mary Birch.
Good morning, and thank you, Mr. Chairman, honorable members of the board. I'm also here speaking for the IHSS. I am a recipient, and I have been for about 8 years now. I want you to know that at this point in time, my pain levels rank around a 9, but this is so important that you said that I better fight through the pain. I want you guys to understand from the recipient view how important this program is. Before I had somebody to help me, I could not clean my house. The only thing that I had cleaned regularly was the kitchen. Everything else was whatever was the most needy at the time, which means usually my bedroom in the closet never got cleaned. I have days when I wake up dizzy. I have days when I'm not dizzy, but my balance is off and I bounce off the walls. Days like this, I cannot and will not drive. I need somebody that can take me places or run errands for me. I have been told by my physical therapist not to do my laundry anymore. So now my provider has to do my laundry at the laundromat. I'm on a fast track, and it's getting worse. I've been trying to get a list for a second person to come in the mornings, and for over a month, and have not been able to get a list. And it has impacted me. I live on my Social Security, and as you guys know, we didn't get a raise last year. We were told that there was no cost of living raise. I'm like, no, we didn't figure that one out since everything went up and my income went down. So it's real hard for me to make things neat, make things balance. And I, my in-home help person sometimes will help me out in regards to she knows that if when I'm hurting a lot, I won't eat, so she'll go get something to entice me to eat. She pays for that out of her own pocket. She doesn't have to, but she does it because she cares about what's going on with me. I think it's a shame that they have to have a second job to go with this one in order to make ends meet. It's not right that you guys, that this program seems to be under attack. I could not make it without my in-home person. And I don't know how much longer I'm going to be able to stay independent. And at my age, it's real hard to find a board and care for home. I'm only 50. Most of them won't take you if you're not 55 or older. And I want to be independent. And she helps me to do that. So please, look at this program. They are more valuable than you can realize. What they provide not just cleaning services, but encouragement, care. They fight for us because we can't fight on our own. So I just ask that you gentlemen look at the program, what's going on in the program, the false accusations that's being used, the cuts in pay, the cuts in hours. Please do not kill this program with these things. It's needed. Thank you.
Thank you. Mary Birch, and following Mary will be Cheryl Davidson.
Good morning, everyone.
Morning.
Before I get started on my speech, I'd like to bring up a couple of articles that's been in the paper the last couple of mornings about Anitra and Miles, her autistic son. I'm sure you've all read about that. And this is a good example of just how hard this job is and how sad sometimes it can turn out to be. My name is Mary Birch. I am the caregiver and conservator of my 37-year-old daughter, Christy. Excuse me just a moment. Who is at the 7 to 9-year-old level, and I hope to do so for many years to come. I'm nearing 70 years old and praying that I will be in good health for many more years for her. I know firsthand how important it is for her and everyone like her to be cared for in their own homes. I have spent 30 years volunteering and working with the disabled. I worked as a volunteer at the Kennedy Center for many years. I served on the board of directors that governed two programs for the developmentally disabled for a period of 4 years. I also served as a committee member on the IHSS advisory board for 4 years. I worked at Community Continuum College in Turlock for many years as the disabled cosmetologist and hairdresser. I've seen firsthand, and I mean hands-on, as their hairdresser, the difference in the students' behavior, their well-being, and their overall health and hygiene of those living at home and those who were living in a group home. I am so grateful that I am able to care for my daughter at home. I also know that there is no love in a group home. It's all about the money. You're thinking about cutting our wages from $9.38 an hour to $8 an hour. Well, I'm thinking that you should increase our wages to at least $10 an hour. What about the group homes? Some or all of them are making over $100,000 a year. So tell me this. Why is it that they get paid three or four times more the amount than a family member does for doing the same type of disability? They have the same type of disability. I don't understand that. It makes no sense to me. Where does that money come from, and where's the justice there? Moving on once again, the fraud unit. You have allocated the fraud unit thousands of dollars to weed out the fraud in our IHSS programs. I'd like to know where the fraud unit is that should be weeding out the fraud in our, in the political arena. Bell, California is a good example of fraud in the political arena. I'm sure you have all heard or read in the papers about this atrocity. How on earth was this allowed to happen? Where was the fraud unit? The state of California has put its focus on the IHSS program instead of where it should be, in their own back pockets. Let's see now. $800,000 a year for the city manager. He went unchecked for years while he allegedly lent money to himself, his assistant, his city council members, the police department, and an array of city workers that included a recreation attendant. City officials also mismanaged more than $50 million in bond money. They levied illegal taxes and paid exorbitant salaries to leaders. And in the town of Bell, where one in six residents live in poverty, I wonder how many of those residents were IHSS workers. This is a good example of real government abuse in the political arena. Our little 1 to 2% abuse in the IHSS program seems pretty small to me compared to this. The people who were involved in this one particular incident included the mayor, the vice mayor, the city council, and the former council members. Millions of dollars gone, money that could have been used to care for the poor, the disabled, and the elderly. You may say, well, this is another town and another place. This does not pertain to our town. Well, if you do say that, then you are mistaken, because it does pertain to us and our town. It pertains to every town in America, because I would bet my life that there is fraud in every town and city in America. I used to be proud to call myself an American. I'm still proud to be an American, just not as much as I used to be. Thank you.
Thank you. Cheryl Davidson, followed by Carrie Young.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Cheryl Davidson, and as promised, we're back again. Supervisor DeMartini, I'm glad to see that you're awake today. And Supervisor O'Brien, I would really appreciate it if you would take this matter seriously. I hope that you really had time to soul search as to the statement that I made last meeting during public comment. I'd like to express that these vulnerable people, young and old, are being intimidated and constantly harassed by using the taxpayers' money to hire and train these investigators, when ultimately, if the social workers were doing the work that they were paid to do, we wouldn't need to waste money on these unregulated raids that by using scare tactics are causing many serious medical conditions. These investigators are not medically trained and therefore have no right morally or ethically and should not be allowed to cause this anxiety and stress. We are supporting getting fraud out of the government, the offices, and every other program. But please stop allowing this torment and find another way of enforcing this fraud elimination. I know by investigating your profiles online that some of you are Christians, and God's convictions that are stirring in your hearts, you know that what you are allowing to do is wrong by trying to sit there all righteous and play God with his favored people. All I can say is, but for the grace of God, there go I. And in the end, God's decision will be the final decision.
Okay, Carrie, before you speak, we're seeming to have trouble today with controlling our emotions. This isn't an athletic event. We've talked about it before, about this applause after every speaker. We're being polite and listening to what you have to say. We're going to continue to do that. And we're going to ask that you refrain from these outbreaks of applause. Please.
Good morning. My name is Carrie Young. I'm from Merced County. And I'm here in support of friends and family I have living in this county. I don't think there's a problem with emotion in here unless it's on that side of this podium. There's a problem with emotion. When people come in here telling you that they're going through 80-year-old underwear drawers, that people live in fear and harassment, and they're scared to even leave their home, and you go on and allow it to happen, that's when there's a problem with emotion. That's when there is no heart on the other side of this podium. That's the only problem that we're having. This program costs this county no money. You are reimbursed every 18 months for the money spent. And yet, you want to reduce wages? There's no problem with emotion here. There's problem with emotion there because you're not using it to tell your brain what to do the right thing.
Thank you. Ed Huddleston. And following Ed will be Astrid Zuniga.
Morning.
Morning.
I just want to ask you, I know you're not going to answer me, I want to talk about not the religious, but I want to speak to the Christians on the board, because there's a difference between a religious person and a Christian person. And if you are familiar with your Bible, God does ask us to take care of the sick and the lame, and also the children.
Thank you. Astrid Zuniga. And following Astrid will be Ron Halseth.
Hello again. Good morning. I'm here again today to reiterate the importance of this program as a whole. Not only to us as providers being able to pay our bills and to do the right thing, but to the elderly and the disabled. I'm not sure you really understand the effects and get it that this program has to their well-being. These individuals should be able to feel safe, and that's what this program gives them, this sense of safety and security in their own homes, to be cared for by people that they trust. You know, the way I see it, the elderly have earned it, and it is our moral obligation to care for our disabled within the community. And these cuts that y'all and the state continue to propose are ridiculous. As I've said before, it will only harm the county and the community in the long run. And the way I see it, if you all really want to help our county and the people that live within the county, the citizens, then take that 2.75% raise y'all gave yourselves and donate it to a program that needs it and to people that need it more than you. Or do we have another bar city here in Standard Falls County?
Thank you. Ron Halseth. And following Ron will be Philippa Therese.
Good morning. I spoke a couple of weeks ago, and I could tell that you had no interest and no compassion. We deserve better than that, so shame on you. Shame on each and every one of you.
Philippa Perez.
Hi, good morning. Sorry, I used to speak Spanish.
With your permission, I'll translate for
sure.
Yo tengo dos niños incapacitados.
I have two disabled children.
Y cuido de ellos.
And I care for them.
Uno tiene autismo.
One has autism.
Y la niña tiene 4 años y está totalmente discapacitada.
And then I have a 4-year-old daughter who's 100% totally disabled.
Ella depende de máquinas para vivir.
She depends on machines to stay alive.
Para respirar, para comer.
to breathe, to eat.
Y ella no se puede mover, no puede hablar.
She can't move, she can't talk.
Y aparte eso tiene seizures.
Okay.
And seizures, ataque.
Oh, seizures. She also has seizures.
Yo les pido que por ellos.
I'm here hoping that for them.
Tengan caridad.
That you care.
Y no corten este programa.
And that you keep this program intact.
Porque es la única manera que ellos estén conmigo.
Because this is the only mechanism that she has to have them with her.
Mi niña no tiene mucho tiempo de vida.
Her daughter has no, not long to live.
Y yo quiero estar con ella todo el tiempo.
And I want to be with her as much as possible.
Si ustedes tienen hijos, me entenderán.
If you have kids, you should understand.
Es la única manera que tengo de comunicarme con ellos, una sonrisa que me da, es lo único, no habla.
Just to see her smile is all that I get from her, because she don't talk.
Tengan compasión, por favor.
Please have compassion.
Yo no sabía de los incapacitados hasta que los tengo cerca de mí.
She never thought that it would be a concern of her, the disabled, until her kids were born disabled.
Gracias.
Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes the requests we had for speakers. Is there anyone else who would care to speak on item not on the agenda today?
Good morning, every one of you, chair, members. I thought I would get up here and say that years ago when I was working at the phone company, a blind couple trusted me so much that they wanted me to come to work with them with IHSS, so I worked 4:30 to 10:30 at the office, so I had the whole day free, so I worked with this blind couple for 11 years. And they didn't want anyone else. And then I don't understand why that we keep going down, 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 down. I mean, I worked for my sister-in-law. She begged me to get someone to come in and to keep her in her home. She's passed away since then, but she wanted me to get 24-hour care for her. Well, I did try, but it didn't work. And she said, I don't want to go to the home. They're mean to me there. And she was my ex-sister-in-law, but she begged me to do something. I got every program I could think of to keep her safe. I checked with the MSSP. They came out. They did everything they could to have her safe with the equipment in her home. And I praise God for them because they brought her out a can opener she could use, a longer cord for her phone, I mean, just things that would be safe while we couldn't have 24-hour care for her. But it just seems like nowadays there's no compassion for getting anyone out to help anyone except to come out and chastise and say that we're doing everything wrong. But we're not. And I went to the... Excuse me, I'm sorry. I visited the... not the Board of Supervisors, but the Advisory Board. They showed us movies and they talked about that they were going to build a lot of homes to keep people out of rest homes, so to speak. What is that program that they showed? And they were going to build a lot of cabins for the people to keep them out of homes. I said it a while ago and now I can't think of the name of it, but I know you know what I'm talking about. Every one of you. Anyway, they showed us pictures of all that they were going to build to keep the elderly out of rest homes. And so I don't know. It just seems like things are getting worse and worse and worse, and your wages go down and your work goes up, and we just hardly can't hardly work for $8 an hour. It's just
the way everything else is going to keep going up and the wages are going to keep going down. But I, since they didn't build this complex, they said they were going to build, and the advisory board, they showed all these slides, it didn't go anywhere. I just like to know these people that say, I don't want to go to a rest home, and they cry and they beg. My mother was working at the state hospital when they closed it down. She was a dietitian. Was it Reagan, I think. They put a lot of people out on the streets. I think this is what's going to happen again if things aren't turned around, because there's going to be no place where anyone would want to go, and even if they, probably not enough room to go. So I just hope and pray that between you and your conscience and God, everything's going to be turned around and we're going to be in good shape. Thank you.
Ma'am, could you state your name, please?
Patricia Bird.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Others would like to speak? Just state your name, please.
My name is Alvino Sandoval, and I know you're tired of seeing us here already, and we're not asking for much for what we do. I'm a former jet mechanic, and because my mother is now crippled, so I cannot do that job anymore. I didn't get a chance to do it for long because I had to take care of my mother. So you don't get a chance to build up a fund of safety money and where you can have this and that, and then with all the foreclosures, lost my home not too long ago. So life's getting pretty difficult, so I'm asking you. We're not asking for much. Just, you know, keep our program intact, you know, $9. Hey, it's $9. Not a whole lot. Most of you spend more than that on lunch, I guarantee it, in one meal. That's all we're asking for, over. I know, it's not much. To take up people's, you know, empty dead, dirty bedpans, to clean up piss on the you know, they make a toilet, they hit the ground, they hit the crap sometimes, whatever. Think about the exactness of what's going on. We don't really think about that because you don't think it's going to happen to you. But when it does happen to you, you're like, whoa. Someone asked me how I got involved in this. I said, well, because of my mother. And I would have never thought about this before. I didn't think about it before. But nowadays, I think about it, I live with it every day. I'm very grateful to take care of my mother. I'm very happy. We're not asking for much. Like I said, one meal for you guys. One, you guys guarantee you spend more than that on a meal. More than going out to eat at McDonald's, one meal is $9. That's all we ask for. Okay? Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Okay, well, that will conclude our public comment period. I might note that next week, we will have this item on an agenda item, and so we won't be taking these comments during public comment, but we'll have an opportunity for you to speak during the agenda item, and then we'll also have staff here. There's a number of pieces of information that are either being overlooked or are partially understood, so we'll be talking next week on an agenda item. So thank you. That concludes our public comment period. We'll consider now our consent calendar, which are all the items on the agenda that have an asterisk beside them. And we're going to pull A4 and have it as a separate standalone vote. Prior to that, I'm going to point out at prompting, I might say, from some of the members of the board that item A5 is a proclamation regarding those with Italian heritage. And there are those on our board that prize that, and perhaps Supervisor DeMartini and Chiesa, you might want to make the motion a second.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will make the motion to approve the consent calendar.
I'll second that. Okay, we have a motion and a second for Supervisor DeMartini and Chiesa regarding our consent calendar. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, and as regarding item 4, Mr. Robinson, you had a comment you'd like to make?
Yes, I do have a correction prior to your vote. We had identified December 13th in the initial handout as a night meeting. That designation should have been applied to the December 20th meeting. So if you can note that one correction, December 13th will be a day meeting, December 20th will be a night meeting.
Are there any comments from board members? The chair will entertain a motion. A motion for approval from Supervisor Monteith, second by Supervisor Caza. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
4-1 with Supervisor O'Brien in opposition. Being past the hour of 9:05, we will continue this meeting as the Board of Supervisors and reconvene as the Redevelopment Agency.
Good morning.
Mr. Ford.
Good morning. All of the items that you have on your calendar are consent items today for the agency.
Okay, we have, it looks like, three items on consent, and including the approval of minutes from September 14th. Chair will entertain a motion for approval.
So moved.
Supervisor O'Brien, okay, I heard I didn't see it. And second, Supervisor Caza, or Development Agency member, let's say. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Consent calendar is approved. There aren't any other agenda items. Is that correct, Mr. Ford?
That is correct. I would like to remind the agency, however, that and the public, that our five-year implementation plan is out on the streets for review right now. We're going to be having a public hearing on October 19th before this agency, and I encourage everyone to take a look at that implementation plan and comment on it before that meeting.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Opportunity for a public forum. Anybody cares to comment regarding the Redevelopment Agency? Seeing none, we will adjourn the meeting of the Redevelopment Agency and reconvene as the Board of Supervisors, and we will consider next.
Thank you.
Item B4.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will address this particular item, and I would indicate that our County Clerk and Recorder Registrar, Voter Lee Lendergan, does have a comment that she would like to make at the conclusion of my presentation. Several months ago, I brought to you a request for, on behalf of the City of Modesto, to share the cost of a Measure M vote for the Park Lawn neighborhood that would, if ultimately approved, be placed on the November 2nd, 2010 ballot. Measure M vote is an advisory vote that determines whether the citizens in the City of Modesto will support an extension of their sewer system to other areas not currently covered by that sewer system. As you all know, the Park Lawn neighborhood is a neighborhood that is underserved and is in need of infrastructure. The initial estimate of the City of Modesto was in the neighborhood of $10,000 to $15,000 to conduct this election. Subsequent to the city developing their own estimate, they were able to communicate with our Registrar of Voters, and a revised estimate of $33,000 was indicated. The city has asked the county to reconsider its initial authorization for funding of up to $7,500. It is staff recommendation that you consider and approve an increase to a maximum of 50% of the cost of the election, not to exceed $16,500.
Thank you. Ms. Lendergan, do you have something you want to add?
Good morning to the board. I'm Lee Lendergan, Santa Falls County Clerk Recorder Registrar of Voters. And I bring before you today just a little bit of background information to, I think, clarify some of the questions that have been brought forth. The one thing that I think, I guess there's more than one thing, the things that I'd like to bring before you today are kind of a timeline of what happened and when it happened. The City Council staff request was made for a Measure M type of measure to be placed on, which ultimately was called Measure L, and that took place on July 13th. It was brought before the board with a consideration for a cost request share on July 27th. And we were asked on July 23rd what the costs might be for a shared. We were given an email by the city clerk at that point in time. So that was on a Friday. We responded to that within approximately a week. So this was brought before you without questioning what the cost might be. And this is why there's a difference in the cost. Generally, the city of Modesto brings their types of measures before the voters, along with the other candidates that they have going to election. The city of Modesto has no candidates going to election at this point in time, which means that their measures bear the entire brunt of the cost of their share of the election, rather than the main brunt being borne by the fact that they have candidates with an add-on of a measure. Therefore, the cost is more than they, looking at their own paperwork, had anticipated, and yet they had not asked us for any kind of estimate yet. We gave them an estimate. Our estimate was given to them on August the 10th, at which time we estimated it was approximately $1.15 to $1.75 per voter. And we always estimate on a per voter basis. We don't estimate on a basis of the election, because we never know how many voters there will be until 15 days prior to the election. At this point in time, we're not even there yet. We don't know how many voters we will have, because they can continue to register to vote, or they'll continue to move away. So either way, we aren't sure what our total numbers are until that date. So in looking back at this point in time, I can tell you that as of now, City of Modesto does have 96,494 registered voters. We anticipate it will be $1.15 to $1.75 per voter. And that was based upon the fact that they thought it would be approximately 26 pages of materials of the sample ballot pamphlet. It turns out it's only going to be 12 pages. So that will make a differential. And of the 12 pages, their measure J will be 6, measure K will be 4, and measure L, the one we're talking about here, will only have 2 pages in the sample ballot pamphlet. Now, what that's going to do in terms of these cost differentials, I can't tell you until the end. However, I will say that the dollar amount that's been brought before you today, it should not exceed that amount.
Okay. Any questions for Ms. Lunderman?
And I would point out that I certainly wasn't criticizing Lee or her office operations and the estimate that they gave. I tried to clearly indicate that the estimate we were using was based on the city's estimate and not yours.
Yeah, I understand that. There's one other thing I want to bring forth, and Supervisor DeMartini had asked for some information on this, and I provided it to him as well as Mr. Robinson. There is, back in history, if we want to go back in history, to 1967, there are two items that were brought, one before the Board of Supervisors and one before the City of Modesto. There was an agreement at that point in time for a resolution, and the resolution basically indicated that the City of Modesto would act differently than any other city in Stanislaus County, and that they could bring before the voters measures and candidates on the ballot without first getting permission from this board to go on that ballot. Now, as you know, the Registrar of Voters conducts all elections for federal, for state, and for county actions. And we do it with the budget that we've been given by your Board of Supervisors. Anything in addition to that, anything that's from a district or from a city, must be paid for by that district or city, because they're asking us to conduct it on their behalf. This specific resolution that went through indicates, and it's from January of 1967, it indicates that they no longer have to bring that before this board, that they are able to go directly to our office without having to come to you first. That does a couple different things. It shortens the period of time. So normally, you meet on a Tuesday, we would have to have information from your meeting indicating that we could conduct an election on behalf of a city or a district. But because of this, they could bring us to us last minute, which they did. They brought it to us on Thursday for a Friday cutoff, the 88-day close. The other thing it indicates in here, it specifically says that the city shall reimburse the county in full for all services performed and facilities, supplies, equipment furnished by the county to the city in connection with conducting said elections immediately upon presentation of a bill. And there's a little bit more. But basically, on this type of an incident, on this type of an action in which they have a measure, it would be the direction from this resolution and from our normal practices that we will be billing the city for this Measure L, and that whatever decision this board makes, if you agree to pay for whatever portion is, the city will then give you the bill. So I won't be billing you, because...
And that's accurate. The way that I had worded the agenda item was to request authorization for the county to reimburse the city its expenses, so taking into consideration the fact that the city is responsible for the charges, this would be to reimburse city costs.
Exactly. A little more clarification.
Okay.
Do you have any questions?
Supervisor DiMartini has one, I think.
Yes.
Yes. according to our packet information and a letter from the Mayor Modesto, apparently the city is planning on charging the residents of Park Lawn for this election. And in your opinion, I know you're an attorney also, is it actually legal for a public entity, whether it's a city or a county, to actually charge residents for an election?
Well, I'm not prepared to give an opinion, a legal opinion. Certainly you have Mr. Doring up there who would love to
give any legal opinion. I've never heard of something like this before.
However, I will say this. The area in question is a county area, and the people living therein are county residents. They are not city residents in these islands. The type of measure that is going before the people, this Measure M, is advisory. And it's advisory based upon the fact of people that do not currently reside in the city. So how a city can bill or engage or see people who aren't living in their area, we'd have to go before, I'm sure, county council and city.
I can respond to that. The simple answer is no, we can't charge people for doing elections on their behalf. What the city had intended was a voluntary contribution from the Park Lawn residents, because I'm uncertain of the ability of the Park Lawn residents to be able to provide one-third of $33,000. My request before you today is that the county fund up to 50% of the cost to a maximum of $16,500. The city, I understand, had some assurances from the Park Lawn, from some of the Park Lawn residents, that they would make an attempt to gather and present contributions in an amount equal to one-third the cost of this election. However, I don't know the status of that.
It's just really questionable that the city could be asking residents who are not even in the city limits to pay for an election. It's unheard of.
And that's why we are taking the conservative approach in my recommendation to you that funding by the county through our community support fund be identified up to 50% of that cost.
Okay, any other questions for our elections officer? Doesn't look right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anybody from the audience care to comment on this item? Okay, we'll bring it back to the board. And Supervisor DiMartini, as supervisor for that district, what do you recommend here?
Well, yeah, I still have a problem with the city expecting the residents to pay for this. There's a couple of issues here that are important. This Measure M vote shouldn't even go before the voters in the first place unless funding is identified. And that's unusual that this would even go forward when there's absolutely no funding identified for it at all. And I believe that the city, at the very least, ought to pay for the other half of this election. I was okay with the $7,500 that we had the first time, but to increase what we're going to pay up to, I don't know, like $16,000 and still let the city off the hook and not raise the cost of them paying their election is really wrong. If we pay half, they ought to pay half. And they shouldn't even have put it on the ballot unless there was funding identified for it. So, I'm very reluctant to increase the county's cost of this election without the city doing the same.
Well, the city is actually should the election go forward, the city is on the hook for 100% of the cost. So if the county agrees to fund up to 50%, the city, if it's unable to identify contributions equaling up to a third of the cost, would be responsible for whatever the residual amount is.
So they're going to pay the other half.
I would anticipate that would be the outcome.
I would think it wouldn't even be legal to charge somebody for an election anyway. That's not the way it was done in Shackelford. Let me just say one other thing, too. This is along similar lines, but when it comes to the Shackelford area, the county has spent probably close to $9 million upgrading that community with sewer systems, storm drains, sidewalks, street lights. This was done 3 to 4 years ago. This project was completed. It still hasn't been annexed by the city. I checked with LAFCO yesterday. They haven't had any contact with the city of Modesto on annexation in a year. No application has ever been submitted. And the whole purpose of upgrading these islands with these sewer systems, sidewalks, storm drains, is to be annexed by the city. Yet the city has shown no interest at all in annexing Shackelford. It's been one stall and delay after another. And I think that's something that really needs to be addressed, because this was, we're pouring in millions into these unincorporated areas. We expect the city to annex them when the job is done, and they have not done so.
We are working with the city to address final details associated with Shackelford, and would hope to have the answers to the residual questions the city still has relative to the infrastructure improvements that were made in the next several months, and hopefully be able to proceed with the annexation of Shackelford. I think we're all a little frustrated with how that's worked out, but we seem to be making progress in the last several months to address issues raised by the city recently.
Any other comments? Seeing none, Chair will entertain a motion.
I'll make the motion to increase the county's contribution up to 16.5, or half the election.
Yep.
That's it.
Thank you. Is there a second? Second. The motion, Supervisor DeMartini. Second, Supervisor O'Brien. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Are there any Board of Supervisor reports today?
Correspondence.
Now that there aren't any supervisor reports, we're going to go to correspondence.
This board has received a notice of petition for the temporary change involving the transfer exchange of up to 220,000 acre feet of water under the Department of Water Resources permit and the specified license and permits of the United States Bureau of Reclamation.
For this, the Department of Public Works, the Department of Planning and Community Development, the Department of Environmental Resources, and the Agricultural Commissioner and Sealer of Weights and Measures.
This board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
We acknowledge receipt of claims and refer to the Chief Executive Office Risk Management Division. Mr. Robinson, do you have a report for us today?
Well, there's little to report on either the state or federal legislative arena. I would note that one key date that's approaching is September 30th, which is the last date for the governor to sign or veto bills passed on or before September 1st. And we are not hearing anything really out of Sacramento, obviously, in the news. The Big Five have been meeting and discussing budget settlement. However, we don't have any definitive information, and we've heard this before. Hopefully this week we'll see something that is material and meaningful come out of the Big Five meeting, so that we can have a better indication of the impacts of the state budget on local government. Okay.
This meeting is adjourned. Thank you.